This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The U.S. State Department admits that the special envoy for Venezuela was pranked by two Russian comedians, one of whom pretended to be a Swiss official asking about possible military action. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has a report.
Special Representative Elliot Abrams was caught on tape, ruling out the possibility of U.S. military action in Venezuela, unless that government did something crazy like attack the American embassy, but admitting to keeping the idea on the table to make the Venezuelan military nervous. A recording was made by two Russian comedians known for prank calls, one of them posing as a Swiss dignitary and Abrams speaking freely about the situation. The State Department says it's well aware of the prank and blames it on Russia's propaganda playbook and the lengths Moscow will go to prop up the regime of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
The U.S. is ratcheting up pressure on Turkey over its decision to buy a Russian missile system. Senior American diplomats held talks this week in Ankara to lobby against the sale under the threat of so-called grave consequences. Turkish President Erdogan, however, has repeated his plan to go ahead with the purchase. Addressing a rally Wednesday, he also indicated interest in expanding the deal to include a more advanced Russian system. There are reports that the U.S. sale of F-35 fighter jets to the Turks may now be in jeopardy. U.S. President Donald Trump says he would be disappointed if reports that North Korea is rebuilding a rocket launch site are true. Just days after he boasted of having a strong relationship with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, multiple sources say Pyongyang has restored part of a site it began dismantling after the Singapore summit last year. Satellite images are said to show structures on the launch pad at Sohae had been rebuilt between February 16th and March 2nd on the heels of the failed Hanoi summit. This is VOA News. President Trump has tossed out another of his predecessor's Oval Office actions, one that required the reporting of civilian deaths caused by U.S. operations in non-combat areas. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
President Donald Trump has struck a section of an executive order issued by former President Barack Obama that required U.S. intelligence agencies to report civilian casualties resulting from operations in non-combat areas. A spokesman for the White House National Security Council, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said the action by the president eliminates superfluous reporting requirements that don't improve government transparency. Provisions are still in place requiring the Pentagon to report on civilian casualties caused by military operations outside of combat areas. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The former head of the U.S. Central Command, retired Army General John Abizaid, went to Capitol Hill today for a confirmation hearing. He is President Trump's choice for ambassador to Saudi Arabia, a post which has long been empty. Abizaid told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee the U.S.-Saudi relationship is complicated.
War in Yemen, the senseless killing of Jamal Khashoggi, rifts in the Gulf Alliance, alleged abuses of innocent people to include an American citizen and female activists, all present immediate challenges.
Abizaid's nomination is expected to easily win Senate confirmation. A bomb and gun attack Wednesday in eastern Afghanistan killed at least 17 people, most of them construction company workers. Officials say five militants, including suicide bombers, staged the pre-dawn assault near an airport in the Nangarhar provincial capital, Jalalabad. More from AP correspondent Kathy Gannon.
It's not clear why they were targeted, but it would be probably because of their active involvement in the reconstruction in Afghanistan. Some of these militant groups have been very active in trying to dismantle any of the reconstruction that has been going on. They've been trying to target the infrastructure in Afghanistan.
The nine-hour siege ended when Afghan security forces managed to kill the assailants. Another 2,000 civilians have fled the embattled Syrian city of Baghouz, the last piece of territory being held by the Islamic State. About 400 ISIS fighters are also reported to have surrendered after a failed attempt to use smugglers to get them to safety. U.S.-supported forces have for some days been predicting they would shortly be in total control of Baghouz. An activist group says a prominent human rights lawyer in Iran who was defending those protesting mandatory headscarves for women has been convicted and faces years in prison. The lawyer is Nasrin Sotoudeh, who previously served a three-year term for her defense work. The executive director of the Center for Human Rights condemned the arrest. Gene Randall, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Thursday, March 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A tribunal has ordered Nigeria's Electoral Commission to turn over materials used in last month's election to the opposition PDP.
We don't have any problem at all with allowing anybody to come and inspect our materials to the extent of the order given by the tribunal.
Rotimi Oyakami is the chief press secretary to Nigeria's Independent Electoral Commission chairman. A coalition of opposition parties in Liberia calls for the arrest of the country's finance minister. A new report says women who want to work are penalized for being mothers. And it appears the plight of people with albinism is taking center stage in Malawi's upcoming May election.
Actually, there is a need for government to make sure that they find the source where these people who are killing our friends with urbanism are selling whatever they get from these people so that it comes to an end.
Adson Kalaile is the National Public Secretary of the Opposition of Malawi and calls to include palliative care in East Africa's universal health care. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, says it is the politicians, not the Electoral Commission, who are involved in election rigging. Rotimi Oyakami, chief press secretary to INEC chairman Mahmoud Yakubu, says the mandate of the commission is to conduct free and fair election. His comments came after a presidential election petition tribunal late Wednesday ordered the commission to surrender materials used in last month's presidential election to the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, for inspection. PDP presidential candidate Alhaji Atiku Abubakar is challenging the conduct of the February election. Oyakami says the commission will obey the tribunal order even if it has to appeal later.
The Independent National Electoral Commission will allow the PDP candidate to inspect the materials to the extent of the order given. If he checks the records of the commission, we have always been law-abiding. Even when we disagree, we will first of all obey the court order and then we can appeal that decision.
Well, as you know, the PDP claimed that there was a litany of premeditated malpractices in the last elections. Are you confident that your commission will come clean after the inspection?
We are absolutely confident. You know, the commission does not engage in the rigging of elections. Our mandate is to conduct elections. It is the politicians that rig elections. We prepare for it and we always set out to succeed. But you then find that these same politicians are the ones that disrupt the process and attempt to sway the result in their favor. And we always resist that. We don't have any problem at all with allowing anybody to come and inspect our materials to the extent of the order given by the tribunal. Now, in areas where there were malpractices, the commission applied the rules because in our rules and guidelines and in the Electoral Act, there are clear laws to be applied where you have, for instance, ballot box snatching and smashing, where you have people attack our staff at the polling unit, or where they destroyed the ballot papers willfully, or where they refused to use the smart card reader because the smart card reader is compulsory for every voter. The smart card reader will be the one to identify the permanent voter's card of each voter, authenticate it, and then you go to the biometric. Where the biometric failed and you are identified and authenticated, there is provision for every voter to vote on the manual register of voter by thumbprinting a small box under the picture provided for already in the manual register of voters.
Exactly so, because during the election, there were areas in the country where, because of violence, voting never took place. People were saying, why didn't your commission hold re-election in those areas before announcing the final results?
Thank you very much. For the presidential election, it's only one constituency, that is all the 36 states of Nigeria and the Federal Capital Territory. Voting took place in each of the 36 states and also in the Federal Capital Territory. However, in some of the states, there were local government areas where some violence took place, where there was ballot box snatching, where our adult staff were abducted, where some people deliberately refused to use the smart card reader. And of course, the returning officer, in giving accounts, noted all these areas and cancelled the results from those areas. So it wasn't a large scale. Now, if that were to be the case, then we cannot conclude the election because each state must bring the results. In other words, those areas referred to where voting did not take place, they were not substantial enough to affect the overall result.
Rotimi Oyakami is the chief press secretary to Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission chairman, Makmun Yakubu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The coalition of opposition political parties in Liberia has called on the government of President George Weah to make more arrests in connection with the allegedly missing $16 billion Liberian dollars and the additional $25 million U.S. dollars. Two reports released last week faulted officials at the Central Bank of Liberia. A coalition of four opposition parties released a statement Wednesday calling for the arrest of Finance Minister Samuel Tuah and Central Bank Governor Nathaniel Patry for their roles in the missing money saga. Benonai Yure is chair of the opposition coalition.
That is only the beginning of the fight against corruption. But I'm saying the same thing that was done to Weeks, Sirleaf, and the other young man must be done to Tuah, Patriot, and everybody that was mentioned or involved in this whole scheme.
Why are you pointing out Governor Patriot and Minister Tuah?
Minister Tuah is on record for saying he personally supervised the infusion of the money into the economy. And there are instances where money changer had indicated that they criminally lied on them. There's one instance where a money changer said he was only giving 5,000 U.S. dollars to exchange. And in their report, they're saying 100 plus thousand were given. Justice must be done to all Liberians. And if you look at the amount of money you're talking about, if you convert 25 million U.S. dollars into Liberian dollars, you will come up with approximately 4.7 billion Liberian dollars. It's double the amount that we're talking about with Weeks and Sirleaf. So the $25 million mopping up exercise is more grave to the Liberian economy. Why would you have Tuah and Patriot walking around Monrovia and you got Weeks, Sirleaf in prison?
Do you consider this selective justice?
Selective in the sense that you're targeting people, but the people near President Weah, he's shielding, and we're not going to tolerate it. If you listen to our statement, we're giving him a few days to go out and have Tuah and Patriot also arrested.
The opposition, in collaboration with civil society, protested for $16 billion, but I don't hear you saying much about it.
The government must stop joking with the people of Liberia. President Weah came to the airport and said his government vindicated on this $16.5 billion. He got to be joking. How can your government be vindicated when you have your deputy governor being arrested? How can your government be vindicated when you have your former governor of Central Bank being arrested? What is your definition of vindicated? Your government has been implicated. Your Minister of Finance is implicated. Your present governor, Nathaniel Patriot, is implicated. Look, normally people believe that after a few days, it's over in Liberia. We're not going to let this go. We're going to demand that Samuel Tuah must be arrested. He must give account of the $25 million.
Benonai Yure is the chair of the Coalition of Four Opposition Parties in Liberia. He spoke with Moses Gaziewu in the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 7th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Kenya and Somalia have committed to peace while undertaking to amicably resolve the current maritime dispute at talks mediated by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia yesterday in Nairobi. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
It was all private affair in State House Nairobi when the three met to mediate on the ongoing conflict between Kenya and Somalia. In a statement issued by President Mohamed Abdullahi of Somalia, he said the discussion included recent diplomatic tension and that Somalia and Kenya have committed to strengthen their working relations. Don Anaclet, an analyst from Alliance for Real Change Kenya, said the meeting is geared towards having an amicable solution for the conflict that has been there for long now.
I really think that the talks today are geared towards the right direction. They show that Kenya and Somalia both prepared to tackle this matter in one of the most lawful and peaceful ways. Again, we need to take this with a pinch of salt. given that the same matter is still before the court at the ICJ.
Apart from the border conflict, the two heads of state also held talks on how to combat terrorism in the region and formulate measures to bring peace and stability. However, Don claims that the involvement of the third party, in this case the United Kingdom, may not be for the good of Kenya, and that Kenya should still be worried about the ownership of the gas and oil blocks in the Indian Ocean.
Normally, once the United Kingdom, France, or the U.S. often gets involved in Africa's economic matters, then definitely there is an economic plagiarism going on.
Kenya faulted Somalia for engaging in the London auction in total disregard of ongoing mediation process and boundary allocation case at the International Court of Justice filed by Somalia on 28th of August 2014. Earlier, Kenya's Foreign Affairs Cabinet Secretary Monica Juma had insisted that Kenya will not take it kindly from Somalia's action.
Kenya has the highest investment in the seeking the stability of Somalia in per capita terms in the world. When we met on the 28th and the 29th of January, a large part of our discussion was how we can bring support to bear so that Somalia's reconstruction can be fast-tracked. So, frankly, why now? I don't know, because this case is in court and there was an undertaking both ways that we would not do anything that would try to shape the trajectory of the hearing at the ICJ.
Kenya-Somalia relations became bitter mid last month after Somalia reportedly sold off Kenya's oil and gas blocks to a London auction. And now the region is yet to see if yesterday Wednesday's talks between the two countries, mediated by Ethiopia, will bear fruits. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In Malawi, a spokesman for the opposition People's Party of former President Joyce Banda says the government must do more to arrest and prosecute those involved with the abduction and killing of people with albinism. This comes after people with albinism and their sympathizers Wednesday marched to the presidential palace in Lilongwe to protest the killing of albinos. Jackson Kalaili is the National Publicity Secretary of the People's Party.
As a party, we are very much concerned with the killing of albinos. So, actually, there is a need for government to make sure that they find the source where these people who are killing our friend with albinism are selling whatever they get from these people so that it comes to an end.
One of the reasons they held the vigil was they need more security. President Mutharika announced, I think it's earlier this month, that he had offered some money for anyone with information about anyone who want to harm people with albinism. He also promised to buy security alarm for the people with albinism. What would the former president, Joyce Banda, what would she do if she were elected? What would be her policy?
Actually, she mentioned that during the Matthias Day prayer day in Ekwendene about this. Actually, the issue of urbanism should be dealt with agencies. Not a matter of giving them security or whatever the case it might be, but it's a matter of ending whatever is happening. Because you might be aware that some two suspects, key suspects, were about to reveal what is happening behind the urbanism killing. Were killed. One was killed in Machinga. When he was with the police officers going towards Zomba, he jumped from the vehicle and he died. One was beaten in the police cells. So nothing can change, even if you say that they give out millions and millions. What must be done most is to find the root cause of these killings and end that. That would be the better solution for that. And as People's Party, we are very much willing that once we get into government in 2 months' time, we are going to end this, because we are going to find out what is happening. What actually are these people doing with these parts of these people living with albinism? So the issue is about finding the root cause and end there. Even if you can give them security, if you haven't find the root cause of this, the problem might always be there. So we need to end the problem so that it has to stop at all.
As a young man growing up in Liberia, at one time we had people who, for ritualistic purposes, were killing people until there were action by the government that brought it to a halt. What do you think is the reason behind the attacks against people with albinism?
Actually, the reason is not yet known. There are maybe some say just for rituals, some say so, several reasons, but I see no reason why that should happen, because people living with albinism, they are human beings like any other person. So I think there might not be any special thing from that.
The president has promised some money for information. He has also promised to buy these security alarms to be given to people with albinism. Do you think that is enough, or do you think the government needs to do more?
Actually, the government has to do more beyond that. I've said already that there are some people who have been willing maybe to give out the information concerning the killing of these people with albinism. So what actually can end this problem now is to find the people behind the killing of this albinism.
Axen Kalaile is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Party of former President Joyce Banda. You're speaking with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. The International Labour Organization says the work and pay gender gap remains wide, and only strong policies and laws that are implemented will change the situation for the better. Lisa Schlein reports from ILO headquarters in Geneva, where the agency has launched a new report called A Quantum Leap for Gender Equality for a Better Future of Work for All in advance of International Women's Day on March 8.
When it comes to getting a job, women lag far behind men. The International Labour Organization finds the needle on this has hardly moved over the past 27 years. It says 26% fewer women than men are likely to be employed. It says this also extends to women in top jobs. ILO data show globally that just 25% of managers or leaders are women. It says women who make it to the top tend to be 1 year younger and better educated than their male counterparts. Despite these qualifications, authors of the study say women do not draw the same salary for the same top job done by men. Globally, the study finds the gender wage gap remains at an average of 20%. Shauna Olney is chief of the ILO Gender, Equality, and Diversity branch. She says mothers of young children up to age 6 have the lowest chance of being employed.
The motherhood employment penalty has increased over the past 10 years by 38%. So again, something is not going right. This is going in the wrong direction. There's also a motherhood leadership penalty, as only 25% of managers with young children are women, and women's share in managerial positions rises to 31% when they don't have children.
Olney tells VOA the work done by women in leadership roles tends to be underrated. When it comes to job performance, she says women tend to be praised for their so-called soft skills, for their ability to communicate and relate well with people.
I think the fact that we call them soft shows they're undervalued. They're not the hard skills. They're not the serious stuff. They're soft. So why should we pay for them? Why should we give them any value? So I think there's a lot of biases, and the evidence is very clear there, in terms of how we evaluate what women and men do.
The report advocates certain measures to accelerate the pace of change in achieving gender parity. It calls for strong laws and policies that prohibit discrimination in the workplace and promote equality of treatment, opportunity, and outcome. It recommends supporting women through work transitions and giving them a greater voice and representation in regard to labor matters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The African Palliative Care Association says it wants East African countries to include palliative care in their universal health care policy. This comes after a report by the association said many people died prematurely because they cannot access care, and with the biggest percentage coming from low-income countries. Moses Havyarimana reports from Zanzibar.
More than 66 million people suffer severe health-related suffering globally, and 35 million of these were at the end of life, and 5.3 million were children. 80% of these are in low- and middle-income countries, including the East African region. Chronic pain is one of the most significant causes of suffering and disability worldwide, and common symptoms for both cancer and HIV/AIDS. Dr. Emmanuel Luirika is the executive director of African Palliative Care Association.
If you look at HIV and cancer, pain is a major issue. and palliative care helps to deal with that and other symptoms. Because of not having palliative care in our countries, many people die prematurely. And the biggest percentage of those who die prematurely are in our low and middle-income countries.
Palliative care is an approach that improves the quality of life of patients and their families facing the problems associated with a life-threatening illness through the prevention and relief of suffering by means of early identification and impeccable assessment and treatment of pain and other problems, physical, psychosocial and spiritual. Rose Chiwanuka is the country director of Palliative Association of Uganda.
Palliative care affirms life and regards dying as a normal process. I don't think there is anybody who will not die. Once you're born, you'll have to die. But how you go is what really matters. We would love to support people to go comfortably. If somebody has pain, that pain should be dealt with wherever the patient is. We are all potential palliative care patients. When our time comes, what will happen then?
In 2014, all East African countries, while attending the United Nations Assembly in Geneva, passed a resolution unanimously on palliative care, which has 9 roles for the member states. This included training of health workers, provide the palliative care service, and amending the laws to ensure that there is access to controlled medicines. Matthias Kasamba is a lawmaker from the East African Legislative Assembly.
What you eat determines your health, determines your survival and your preventive approaches to becoming a risk of becoming cancerous, becoming diabetic, and even becoming HIV. So it is the home-based approach, which is number one.
In East Africa, Rwanda is the only member state with the national guidelines on palliative care, and only Rwanda and Uganda in the 6 member states avails palliative care funding in the national budget. The review of the national and local legislation and policies for controlled medicines in the member states will be a major achievement for citizens to easily access their care. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Zanzibar.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. His spokesman for Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, says it is the politicians, not the Electoral Commission, who are involved in election rigging. Rotimi Oyakami, Chief Press Secretary to INEC Chairman Mahmoud Yakubu, says the mandate of the commission is to conduct free and fair election. His comments came after a presidential election petition tribunal late Wednesday ordered the commission to surrender materials used in last month's presidential election to the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, for inspection. PDP presidential candidate Alhaji Atiku Abubakar is challenging the conduct of the February election. Oyakami says the commission will obey the tribunal order even if it is to appeal later. The coalition of opposition political parties in Liberia has called on the government of President George Weah to make more arrests in connection with the allegedly missing $16 billion Liberian dollars and the additional $25 million United States dollars. And that is it for this Thursday, March 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.